Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly Podcast. I'm Steve Hoare here to bring you some clips from our best Red Men Plus content from the last week or so. Say it every single time, but if you guys want these shows in full, redmenplus.com is the place to go. If you sign up as a Legend subscriber, you'll also be entered into the rest of our Advent prize draws. We've given away some amazing prizes already to our Legend subscribers, including signed merchandise. We give away a signed day couch shirt on the watch along for the USG game. There's plenty more to come as well, including stuff signed by Jamie Carragher, Chris Kirkland, and the star prize, a shirt signed by Liverpool defender Ibu Konate. So if you want to get yourselves involved, redmenplus.com is the place to go. Right then, let's crack on with the show. The first clip I'm going to bring you is from the final words after Liverpool beat Crystal Palace 2-1 last weekend. It was Dan Clubb, Abby Rudkin and Steve Plunkin, and yeah, here's what they had to say about the Reds and their big win at Selhurst Park.
I guess the talking points, really, one was obviously Alisson Becker being back so soon. I think Jurgen Klopp said he trained on the Thursday and he was going to train on the Friday, but there's two sort of angles to this, I guess. I guess one of them is sort of, he was clearly ready.
He's Alisson Becker.
Yeah.
It's what you do. You can't have the best goalkeeper in the world and think, actually looks like he's fit. But we'll stick with Kraheem. You know, let's be honest, this spell we've seen with Keller hasn't been as fruitful as the last one. You know, we've sat and discussed what the future looks like in previous shows. Alisson Becker's Alisson Becker. If he's available, you play him. He's the best goalkeeper in the world, and I'm sure we'll get on to his input into the game, but I don't think that's a decision you can... It doesn't take very long to make that choice, does it?
That's exactly it, isn't it, Abby? I'll stick with you on it as well, because Steve's right. You know, they probably were quite surprised by his sort of recovery, because I think the initial thought to it might be maybe Manchester United game. He might not even make that one. All of a sudden, we're here and he's training. He's posting on Instagram pictures of his gloves. Everyone going, hang on a minute, like, he could be back here. And Steve's right. Like, when Alisson Becker is ready, he plays, because you can't have Alisson Becker ready and take him and sit him on the bench, or not take him. It just can't happen, can it?
I think Klopp said it was touch and go for the Man United game, so I just wasn't expecting it at all, but that's exactly what you want to be seeing going into these games after the way Kelleher performed. I honestly think if Kelleher would have done a few okay performances, maybe he wouldn't have risked them for this game, but it was shocking. Like, if a few of his performances were shocking, that my nerves were just going, and I just thought, just put Alisson in, even if it's 80% of Alisson Becker, you just know it's probably going to be world class anyway. So, and obviously he has a brilliant game. I mean, he doesn't save the penalty, but can't blame him for that.
No, absolutely. And we'll touch on his exploits in the game in a moment. The other talking point, Steve, was Joel Quanta, really. Now, again, there's angles to this one, if you like. Now, it could be as simple as, you know, we need to rotate our defenders so Quanta gets a game. It could be even as simple as Joel Quanta was the right man for the job. However, a little mischievous piece of me thinks that, because Klopp was asked about signing a new centre-back in January in his press conference, obviously his Joel Matip injury, and he immediately kind of hit back at that and said, no, we don't need one, you know, like, doubling down on Quanta. And then it just so happened he starts in a couple of days' time. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it was. But I think he's there on merit, to be honest with you. And on the centre-back thing, Nat Phillips' loan runs out to Celtic in the first week of Jan.
Yes,
so
it does.
So he's back at the club. So we've got five centre-halves. So I'm a bit like that, whether we're going to sign anyone anyway for that reason. And Qantas probably solved that problem. And when he broke into the side, I remember being in here saying he might save us 50 million quid at some point in the future. Mm. Well, that 50 million quid could be right now, in all honesty. I think he's there on merits. I think he shows an awful lot of promise. He's got lots of traits from Van Dijk. Mm-hmm. You know, from a distance, they almost have a very similar playing style, don't they? He likes to step out with the ball as well, sort of Matip-esque.
Yes.
But I think more of a concern for us would be the form of Konaté, potentially. And there's a reason why he came in and it wasn't Konaté. You know, big kudos to him. Massive show of faith to put two centre-backs on the bench and play him.
Yeah,
and I think it's great. I think it's really good for the football club. I don't think the penalty aside, which is a bit of a weird one. Mm. I don't think he had a bad game. I think he did very well, and it bodes well for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get your thoughts on that as well, Abby, before we do get into the game itself, because Steve's right, and I've been really impressed by Joe Quan. So I've been a little bit surprised by actually how quickly he has developed into this, because it didn't feel sort of coming into the season. I was pleasantly sort of pleased with what I've seen in pre-season, but didn't expect him to have such a big role, didn't expect him to be so impressive either. But it is a show of trust from Jurgen Klopp to start him in this type of game, of course. As Steve mentions it there, obviously Konaté and Gomez both been on the bench. That speaks to how highly things are Konaté. But does it also speak to the way we have to manage Konaté's minutes in particular? Because Steve mentions form, and that's a conversation. But for me, it's actually more of a fitness concern we've got around Konaté, especially now, because we know we can't play him 4, 5, 6 games on the spin because he will break down.
I think you can say that about a lot of them though, like the likes of Gomez and obviously Matip's injured now, as well as Konaté. The injuries have always been an issue, and if you've got the likes of Quanta coming in who might not be likely to get those sorts of injuries, then it's great. Like, I feel like I'm repeating myself saying it, but if we'd have went and signed him for 40 million in the summer, we'd have all been like, wow, that's amazing. Obviously Klopp knew something that we didn't know in the summer, because I was shouting all over the place saying that we needed centre off. So I mean, Klopp knows a lot more than I do. Even with substitutes and stuff, I was having a go, and he gets it right every single time. So yeah, I'd definitely say it could be based on Konaté's form as well. Mm. I mean, I think Gomez was sat there waiting to come on for Trent a lot of the time, and yeah, I'd definitely say it's based on form. I don't want to rip Konaté too much, obviously, but it's not the best, but Quanta is fine. But when you're next to Van Dijk makes everyone look great, especially when he's coming back to, I'm sure we'll come on to it, but he's coming back to his form now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Having him and Alisson on the pitch, it's just, you know, it's like of old.
Yeah, absolutely it is, yeah. And Alisson Becker, as you mentioned there, he's one of the first big talking points of the game, really, because he makes an absolutely huge save and to keep the score at 0-0. It's Jefferson Lerma at the back post. Today I'll come to you on it. This is, we've kind of referenced it there in the opening gambit, but this is why you put Alisson Becker back into the team, is it? Because when those big moments come along, he stands up and he absolutely saves us once again. Ironically enough, on the 5-year anniversary of the Napoli night at Anfield, when he definitely saved us then. Mm-hmm. He did it again the weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't even think Callagher gets anywhere near that ball. That's no disrespect to him. Alisson's just got this thing about reading the game, and good goalkeepers go into spaces where they think the ball's going to be early, and for that reason he gets there. Obviously it pops up and it's cleared. But we sit here every week and we talk about Alisson Becker saves, and we talk about the best in the world. And we've become accepting of that fact that we're going to see one of these a game, and that's a measure of his performances, that it's normal. Mm-hmm. It's almost normal. We give away chances. We know we give away chances. We are always going to give away chances with the way we play, especially with the way the midfield sets up. There's options to get at us a little bit. It's nice to have, in fact, it's wonderful to have that sort of cushion at the back there, isn't it? And Abby alludes to the fact that when he comes in and Virgil comes in, it's like team of old. Yeah. It's an assurance, it's a calmness, and every time he does that, all the players around him start to think, do you know, we probably shouldn't let them get that chance, but he's got it covered. He's ridiculous. I think, you know, the conversation in lots of Liverpool fans, the old and the new, is who's the greatest Liverpool goalkeeper of all time? And I don't think there's a hair's breadth between him and Ray Clements right now. Yeah. And longevity probably works in Clements' favour. Mm-hmm. That's high praise indeed for Alisson, because Ray Clements is revered by most of the people who've been around Liverpool Football Club for years as the best.
Yeah.
I think come the end of his career, Alisson might be the best goalkeeper the Premier League's ever seen, never mind Liverpool.
No, I tend to agree with you as well. And you touched on it there at the end. Like, there's still more to come, isn't there, clearly, this season and beyond from Liverpool perspective. So we're going to get more of these big moments. But again, Steve kind of alludes to it. I think Tsimikas after the game, I haven't got the exact quote, so forgive me, but essentially said something very similar in terms of, we feel safe when Alisson's behind us, albeit we do concede these big moments because Alisson's there. They're not big, big moments. Whereas that was evidence when it was Kelleher, because Liverpool's defence isn't watertight. We don't, like, teams get in behind us, teams have half chances, teams have moments. And when it's Kelleher, there's a good chance you might concede one or two of them. We've seen that against Fulham, especially, Abby. But if that's Alisson, like it was on Saturday, maybe we don't. So we're doing him a disservice, Kelleher, but we're also not, because we're talking about one of the very, very best, aren't we?
Exactly. You can't come in second best to Alisson Becker for Liverpool. Like, it's sad, really, for the lads, because he's great. And like I've said in previous shows, he could start for at least 10 to 15 Premier League sides. It's just a shame that he's sat on our bench, but not for us, because, you know, he is great. It's just when you've got Alisson Becker there, you can't expect him to be having two Alisson Beckers on the bench. And you could sort of see when in the players, when Kelleher was playing, they were, so once he'd made a few mistakes, because everyone was a bit reluctant to pass it back to him and things like that. Everyone seemed a little bit nervy. But the moment Alisson's there, it's the same with me. The moment you see Alisson's name on the team sheet, you feel relaxed. It's just like, oh, thank God for that. Even though the whole game, I was sort of thinking to myself, like, no one hurt him. And I'm pretty sure Nunes jumped on him at one point when he made a big save. And I was thinking, why are you doing that? Don't hurt him again. You know, you've just got to protect him at all costs. But yeah, it's huge that he's back.
Nice one to Dan, Abby and to Steve for that one. Let's move straight ahead to the Red Men Biased Football Podcast, the one show a week where we get to have a little chat about everybody else, sometimes laugh at them, sometimes give them praise, and everything in between. This time you've got Paul, Chris, Chloe and Dan having a big old chat about some of Liverpool's Premier League rivals.
First and foremost, Arsenal squeaked past Luton, Dan. Declan Rice with the last gasp winner. It was so tantalisingly close. All they had to do was just head it away one more time. And they never, and Arsenal scored, and they got another one of those moments where they got super excited and tearful on the pitch.
They do a lot of that, don't they? The old over-emotional celebrations. And I think Spurs were guilty of that as well early season. All that's come crashing down now, of course, certainly after their victory against us. But the Arsenal stuff's interesting. And I suppose all the conversations we're having now, whether it be here or with our friends or whatever, about Liverpool not really playing well and not clicking into gear, yet still finding ways to win, I guess they were having after that Luton game, especially because they very much fell into that category for a short period of time there. And yeah, I suppose, again, we said it earlier on, like, that's the win, a sort of a championship side wins. So it's winning titles, that's how you do it. And Arsenal, again, did exactly the same thing. But for a moment there, it felt like, you know, the Luton stuff and our Luton result didn't look too bad. All of a sudden, maybe going to Luton was a difficult place and maybe we actually did okay to sort of get out of Dodge with a point. But as it turned out, you know, you've got to credit Arsenal, I suppose, in midweek to go there and do what they did and sort of keep fighting tooth and nail to the death. And the Declan Rice factor as well at that point looked like it had paid off big time.
Well, you know, I'd said in the pre-season, Chloe, that for £100 million, I wasn't sure that there was £100 million worth of improvement to add to Arsenal's side with Declan Rice. But actually, that's a handful of really important goals he's already cropped up with. And that could be one way in which you sort of start to pay that fee back for the deal.
Yeah, he's obviously a brilliant, and he was the best in the market, to be perfectly honest. City also wants them, but we ain't going to pay that much money. Surprisingly, I wonder why. So yeah, Arsenal managed to get the deal done, and to be perfectly honest, he's been boss for them. He's came up with some big goals. He's all over the pitch. He balances their midfield a lot better as well. I mean, you think about it, if it's him not playing, it's probably Jorginho in that role, and that is just the worlds apart, aren't they, in terms of their ability now. So yeah, it was, for me, I was frustrated with Luton because the foul he just runs into him is ridiculous. Yeah, there's, like, the ball, they're in their own half, Arsenal are in their own half with their back to your goal, just either make him bring it down or he's got to get a flick on it and there's no one behind you that's going out for a throw-in. But instead, it's the, we've not been here before, we might get a point against Arsenal, massive, and he's just, his adrenaline, he's just decided to make one stupid foul. And instantly when that happened, I said, yeah, they're scoring from this, because sometimes when you're so stupid, you get the consequences you deserve for it. Yeah. And that was their consequence, Luton.
It's just head it. Yeah. It's Luton. Yeah. If you can't head away long looped balls into the box, then there's nothing down for you. The thing that gets me about the whole Luton thing is every time I watch them, I can't figure out how they got into the Premier League. Mm. And I can't figure out why they're not getting absolutely annihilated 5-0 by everyone every single week. The only players who look like actual footballers who play for them is Ross Barkley, who looked brilliant, actually, in both games. And obviously Andros Townsend, just to jump ahead, obviously gets an assist for the goal at the weekend as well. But like, they can't control the ball. It's that very Pro Evo-y thing where you've got some lads who are dead fast but they've got no touch whatsoever. You've got lads who are big but have got zero pace. And then you've got a bunch of lads who just seem like generic footballers, but you know, they've taken points off us, and they gave City and Arsenal hellish games.
I'm the same as you. I look at them and think, well, what the hell? Like, how? It's got to come down to the old school stadium, and you know, players nowadays just aren't used to, top tier players aren't used to playing in those type of atmospheres when the crowd's right on top of you. Doesn't matter if there's 20,000 less than normal, they're all big sort of bowls and the fans are too far away from the players and stuff. It's just a gnarly little atmosphere at Luton, where I just think it shocks teams a little bit, to be honest with you. And they're sort of riding that wave at home, aren't they, where they think because of the ground, because of the fans and how close they are, that they can get something out of it. And they're just playing on belief more than anything, and you know, nearly two big results, but not quite, unfortunately, for us.
In terms of big results, though, let's start. Chloe Bloxham, midweek, Villa at home, Manchester City. So we were in the studio and it was on post-match. So it was like, obviously the second half was on post-match. So I remember trying to do the post-match content with kind of like one eye on the telly.
Side-eyeing it.
Yeah, 100%. Particularly when they hit the post. Like, I don't really, yeah, it was nearly game over. The table nearly went in the lot. Villa were brilliant. Villa absolutely battered City.
Yeah, we all know what Villa's home form record is like. Unai Emery, boss manager, the philosophy, the playing, they're really entertaining to watch. And he's improved a lot of the players, you know, the likes of John McGinn, Bailey on that right wing. He's making these players brilliant. He's improving them. And like you mentioned there's not many times, in fact, I think I've hardly ever seen Manchester City get played off a park, but Aston Villa did that to them. Obviously, they still had a couple of chances here and there, but they're always going to do that. It's Manchester City. But Aston Villa, like, my word, they're up there for a reason, and it's because they can give absolutely anyone a game. And going into those two games, both Manchester City and Arsenal, I fancied Aston Villa for both, yeah, both of them. And there's, you know, a year and a half ago, that's never the case. So yeah, fair play to them. And I was at Sheffield, so I couldn't fully see the game. But all of the stats, everyone talking about how poor City were and how this isn't the same City that we all know of. And Aston Villa have done us a little favour there, but they also need to do us a favour when we go there. Just lose against us, please. Thank you.
Chloe mentions the stats, Dan. Two shots on target for City to 22-7 for Villa. As much as City had just the possession, ridiculous. 54%.
That's nothing for them.
Yeah.
No, it was a mauling. It absolutely was a mauling. Pretty much from start to finish. I think City's last shot was in like the 11th minute or something outrageous like that. Like, that just doesn't happen for Manchester City, does it? You know, certainly not of this ilk under Pep Guardiola. It's frightening. And all credit, you know, Chloe rightly says, Manchester City might not be firing all cylinders. Not exactly purring at the minute, I think it's fair to say. However, Aston Villa, just getting applauded for me for this one. Absolutely outstanding. Unai Emery continues to sort of defy the odds a little bit, albeit 1-11, the Villa squad on paper is a pretty good Premier League football squad. Mm-hmm. It's definitely punching above its weight right now. Yes. And certainly doing that to Manchester City is punching well above its weight. But he has this knack. We've seen it in Champions League. We've seen it with Villarreal. We've seen it with Sevilla previously. He's an incredibly, incredibly gifted manager. He's really smart.
We'll jump back to Villa in a second. I just want to focus on Man City more than anything, okay, because Chris, that was a game where no Rodri, no Doku, no Grealish in addition to Kevin De Bruyne as well. And, you know, we've seen it with Liverpool a lot where there's a tipping point where you take too many good players out of a side and then they really start to struggle. And that really felt like it. Because on paper, I mean, again, it was still Haaland, Foden, Alvarez, Rico Lewis has been a good player for them so far, Bernardo Silva, Akanji, Stones, Guardiola, Diaz, Walker, Ederson. But, yeah, once you get beyond that, that was the dilemma.
You're missing the magic, aren't you, in the side, ultimately. And I think any team would struggle with that, of course. But Of course, they've not been at it. But I'm with Dan. I just think Aston Villa have been so good. And there's a wider conversation away from the games that interests me more than that is. And it's more like, this is what a manager can do, a good manager. You don't need 300 million, 500 million, a billion pounds to create a good Premier League side. And I think we're all guilty of thinking that's the case. You know, I was sat here on the podcast a minute ago and saying, I think Liverpool need to sign a player if they want to win the league this season. And yet I also think Liverpool are good enough to win the league. Yeah. And we're all sort of trained by Sky Sports to think like that, aren't we? But, you know, Unai Emery, I'm sure he spent money, but he's not spent Chelsea money. And, you know, I think for all the talk of like Evertonians, Toffee TV and everyone talking every week about, you know, we're allowed to spend our money, just get the right man in charge and focus on producing a good football side and stop whinging about we don't have the money or we've got money and all this. Aston Villa weren't in the league, 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. Look at them now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Did they do it with £1 billion? No, they did it by just going about the business the right way and trying to build a side that works.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The City stuff, though, Clough, it's really interesting watching them go through this. And let's tie it into the weekend's game as well, because, again, they get over the line at Luton, but they're a goal down. You know, and they have to dig deep to find a way. Erling Haaland picked up a little, well, apparently he's been carrying a stress fracture in his foot, which is why he was out. He should be back for that. But, I mean, again, for them, they'll see that as a note of encouragement of him being able to drop out and them still get the win. But they just don't feel invincible. And I think that's the most encouraging thing for them, because this is now two spells in the season where they've had a little dip. The first one was the absence of Rodri for 3 or 4 games, and they were awful for it. And then this one, obviously, he's dipped out of it as well. But they just feel, they just don't feel like it's nailed on that they're going to steamroll at everyone they come up against.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cheers to Paul and to the team for that one. Next up, it's Jano Inside Time then. Again, I was missing for this one. I had a couple of days off. I think well earned. I think we'd all agree. But Dan was more than able to fit in and, to fill in and have a good chat with Neil Jones. This week, spoke about the Matip injury, what Liverpool may or may not do in his absence. We had to check out what the guys had to say about that.
We'll move on to transfers then. According to Team Talk, this is Liverpool hope to have the upper hand over Arsenal when they make their play to sign Fulham midfielder João Palhinha in January. Now, a lot has been said about João Palhinha, obviously. The report goes on to say Liverpool have already held talks with the representatives of the Fulham defensive midfielder. The Portuguese, I guess I meant to say international, but it doesn't, would prefer him to stay in, I don't like just the Portuguese.
The whole of Portugal, that's awful, isn't it?
And that is literally copied and pasted from the report, that's on me. Would prefer him to stay in the Premier League rather than the move abroad. His club bought around 60 million. So he very nearly went to Bayern Munich, as we saw. We all seen him dejected leaving Bayern Airport, or Munich Airport rather. 60 million, even in and around that to me, Neil. He's 28 now. He'll be 29 by the time next summer comes around. I don't know about this.
No, I don't think they'll sign him. I mean, listen, they would have tried to sign him in January, in the summer, sorry, if they wanted to. He was available, clearly. Mm-hmm. 28, they signed a 30-year-old. They're not going to sign a 28-year-old for three times that figure at this stage. Look, he's an excellent player. Yes. He's an excellent defensive midfielder as well. He's very much that guy that, you know, if you want a destroyer, you want someone to win tackles and be strong and you know, break up play. There aren't many better than him around in the Premier League at this moment in time. No, I don't think Liverpool will be signing him. I think Bayern Munich, you know, very much missed out on not just him but a few others in the summer. I expect them to be the front of that queue. I wouldn't expect Liverpool or Arsenal, actually. I know there was a link with them as well. I wouldn't expect either of those two to be going and splashing out.
No, I tend to agree.
50 plus million for a player like him.
No, I tend to agree. It's more down to the age profile. I think if he was 21, 22, we might have a different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he obviously joined Fulham last summer for what, 20 million, I think. And there was some links with Liverpool. It might have made more sense then.
Yeah.
You know, get him direct from Sport, and he's gone on there. You know, he's done nothing but further his reputation in the Premier League, and it's not a case of he's not good enough to make a difference to the Liverpool squad, but having gone and spent the money on Endo, and we saw Klopp talking about Endo and why Liverpool chose to sign him, and, you know, how they came to land upon him. I'm pretty sure in amongst that process they would have landed somewhere along the possibility of Palhinha, and they've turned it down in the summer, so I don't expect them to change that in January.
No, I quite agree. Maximilian Bayer. I apologise either way. Heavily linked actually with Liverpool in recent weeks. I've seen a lot of this going around. The first time I've really addressed it, to be honest, because it felt initially like one of them that might sort of come and go, but as I say, it has hung around. Florian Plettenberg is the latest to touch on it early on this week. Mentions Liverpool's interest, mentions a release clause of 30 million euros. This is for the summer as opposed to January. Many top clubs interested, and as I say, his name has been doing around quite a lot. He's 21, and he also goes on to say he will definitely leave Hoffenheim next summer. So, interesting one in terms of his profile. Very much centre forward, played a little bit on the left wing, but we are talking a very little bit. 6 goals and 4 assists in the Bundesliga. Liverpool have a decent track record of signing lads from Hoffenheim.
Centre forwards,
so,
as well.
Yeah. What are we saying about this one?
Yeah, well, listen, look, I want to keep an eye on. I think, you know, I can't profess to know anything about him as a player. He hasn't been one I've seen play, but if you're 21, you're scoring goals in the Bundesliga and you know, decent level. I know it's not 6 goals and 4 assists, but you're doing okay in double figures in goal contributions in the Bundesliga in a side that isn't one of the powerhouses. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, you know, I'm would be amazed if many top clubs aren't sort of keeping an eye on his progress. I mean, the interesting one is that he's a centre forward. You know, obviously Liverpool have committed very much to Darwin Nunez. They've obviously got Cody Gakpo pushing to start games and actually pushing pretty hard at the moment, yeah. I think, in the way he's been playing. You've still got Diogo Jota, of course, there. But it is one, isn't it, that your five forwards, you know, I think adding a young one in there wouldn't be the craziest decision. You know, you're seeing as soon as Jota gets injured, all of a sudden it does feel a little bit more tight around that, those forward areas. So maybe, you know, if you could add a young one. I know Ben Doak's emerging as a wide player, but if you're talking about a forward, you know, a centre forward to come on, it might be one that does it, especially if you've got a release clause that makes it easier to do. But I think Liverpool won't be won't be the only club who are noticing a young player scoring goals in one of the top European leagues.
No, absolutely, yeah, but I think you're right. I think it's one of them. With that release clause of €30 million, Liverpool and indeed other clubs will be looking at that going, he's a brilliant prospect and he might only cost us, what's that, £25 million, give or take. So yeah, it's a bit of a no-brainer if he is indeed as talented
as he is. Listen, it's still a lot of money, isn't it? Of course it is, yeah. For a 21-year-old, you know, it's certainly an unproven player, but I think it's one of them that I watch him brief and just see how he's developing, and if he's got the skill set, you know, I think to play for Liverpool you'd need to have certain characteristics. I think probably being a bit versatile might be ideal actually, but if you score goals, if you've got a bit of physicality, if you can press, if you can, you know, link the play, you'll be in Liverpool's hitting zone, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. Want to touch on one more, and it's not really a transfer, but it isn't, in essence. Joel Matip's injury has brought about more questions regarding defensive reinforcements, essentially. But before we go into that, there's obviously a lot of talk about his future, out of contract at the end of this season, as we know. Jurgen Klopp addressed it briefly in his press conference, basically putting it on the owner's toes and saying, give him a new deal or else. What did you make of all that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, yeah, he put it on the owner's toes a little bit. It would be sad because he's going to be out until after his contract expires. You know, probably September, you're looking at earliest, really, aren't you? Nine month recovery period for an ACL. And then obviously it's probably, you're looking maybe a month or two after that, even before you're ready to play or certainly to start games. So it would be sad and disappointing from you know, the whole perspective, really, both from the player's perspective but also from the Liverpool fans, that Joel Matip's sort of last moment was limping off or being helped off at Anfield in a game in December. The suggestion would be, I suppose, would be a year's extension, wouldn't it, and let him complete his rehab and hopefully get back to playing in that period. Obviously, I'm guessing the terms would reflect the fact that, you know, he's not a starting player, or he's not, you know, he's not available to start at the beginning of that contract. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was to happen. I think Klopp said to Nisa, we'd do the decent thing or the right thing.
The right thing, yeah.
The right thing. If they don't, then they haven't. You know, they've done the wrong thing, haven't they? So, yeah. Yeah, I think the manager would, if he had his way, I think Joel would get a new contract for the year at least.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of heart in that. But there's a more ruthless side to all this, isn't there? Because, you know, 32 now,
yeah,
33,
yeah.
By
33
the time,
by the time he's back.
Yeah, so
next year, yeah.
Business-wise?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And to be honest, take the injury out of the equation, I wouldn't give him a new contract if he was fit now. Mm-hmm. I would say Liverpool, no, that's your sort of... that's your ceiling of him. I think it's a little bit different when you're sending a player out there that's got, you know, you're talking maybe 6 months without the club, you're condemning him to. He's got injured on, obviously representing your club, so I think maybe the heart element to it might override the logical sort of business sense. But I don't think it'll be it's not going to be a 4-year contract on, you know, £150,000 a week. It's going to be more of a, you know, let's say it's an appearance based one, or an incremental one, that look, if you get back and you hit these targets, then, I mean, we'll give you the reward accordingly. But I think maybe it's just a little bit of a security one for Matip, that you're not going to be on the scrap heap at 32, you know, looking around after coming back from an ACL thinking, right, where's my next club? But it's just, yeah, it's terrible for him more so, because he was playing well. Obviously, he was one of the sort of surprise packages of the season, wasn't he? I think a lot of people, myself included, felt he'd reached the end of his shelf life, and he hadn't. Mm. And then just when he's sort of back established as, you know, first choice centre back, he gets that in a nothing challenge as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was his shirt for the most part recently. He's been absolutely outstanding. And again, I didn't see it coming. I felt like we might have seen the best of Joel Matip, but he continues to defy logic, essentially. Certainly when it comes back to injuries, he's outstanding. But yeah, I think you're right. I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek. I think he does deserve that new contract. The club should do right by him, absolutely, and at least allow him to sort of get back to fitness, get up and running again. What it does also lead to is the question about January, of course, because I think... I wasn't expecting him to get a new deal either, regardless of his form, potentially. I always expected him to sort of be allowed to leave. I think the injury does change that slightly. But there was always a question about, do we then go and replace him? That would have been in the summer. now the talk is January. There's a couple of interesting elements to this. Of course, you can enter the market. And there's also a conversation around Reece Williams, who is yet to play for Aberdeen up north of the border, and Nat Phillips, who has just started playing recently, but he's not in the best of times.
No, he had a disappointing one at the weekend, didn't he, with the own goal. Yeah, I think Jürgen's quotes were sort of instructive, really, on Friday, wasn't it, before the Palace game. He said, yeah, you know, in the ideal world, you just go and buy a top-class centre-back, but who's going to sell us one in the middle of the season? It has to be the right player, blah, blah, blah. That's what we've been saying, really, on shows. You know, if you can bring forward one that you were going to buy in the summer and he's suddenly available, and there is a chance that they will. You know, we always say it going into January, it's a tough market and it's blah, 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 but you can find them. You know, Liverpool have done it many, many times in the past where they found a player in a tough market, you know, Van Dijk, Coutinho, Luis Diaz, Cody Gakpo, Daniel Sturridge. They've done it many, many times. So that's the challenge this time, I think, is there a player that you want for the long term that's available in January? I would, unless more players go down injured and you get to the stage where you've only got one or two fit centre-halves for months, I don't see them making a sort of a stopgap signing where they go, oh, let's go and get Ozenka back. Mm-hmm. The Williams and Phillips ones, look, they've done it before, obviously. Without being cruel, if you're not getting an Aberdeen's team at this moment in time and Aberdeen are not having the best of times themselves, what help are you going to give to Liverpool at that stage? You know, it'd be a massive ask for Reece Williams to spend 6 months or 5 months on the sidelines up in Scotland and then come in and be ready to play Premier League, Europa League, latter stages games. Nat, I think that's only till January, isn't it? His thing. So that may, Nat's probably more likely to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And the way his career's panned out, you wouldn't bank on him. You know, you wouldn't bet against him coming back and being man of the match in the Europa League final or something like that. You know, he just seems to have those kind of weird turnarounds. Yeah. I'd be looking at Williams coming back and then going back somewhere else on loan, as opposed to going into the first team. Phillips, if he was coming into the first team, I think it would just have to be very much emergency cover because he was there at the start of the season and Liverpool let him go out on loan. He hasn't played too much since. He's obviously not long-term Liverpool's plans, but at least he's got the game, I think, to just do a job for Liverpool. I think Williams clearly, you know, needed the loan to go well, and he's had, unfortunately for him, his last three have gone pretty poorly. You know, he's had Swansea, he's had Blackpool, he's had Aberdeen. He's not really had much luck with any of them. So I think he needs to go and play somewhere else at this moment in time.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and just finally on this, if it was on you, what would you be doing in January?
I'd buy a new centre back. I'm sure Liverpool will be across a lot of situations who might be available. I'm sure they'll have a list of centre backs that they feel are good enough. I'd be working through that list and trying to find one that's available in January. Most definitely, I think they were short. You know, Kwanzaa has helped in the start of this season massively because he's emerged, and I think you've got to give him the credence that he's potentially a first team player. But you look at the options they've got. Jürgen can say they've got four centre backs, but one of them's playing right back. Mm-hmm. One of them has played two Premier League games, and obviously Kanate is a player that's a huge upside, but also a downside that he doesn't often play a long run of games. You know, I think he's only met twice, reached six for Liverpool in a row, six starts. He's had problems this season where he's had to be withdrawn from France squad. He's been pulled up in a warm up over in Toulouse. You know, he hasn't started games. I mean, he didn't start at the weekend, for example. Mm-hmm. I think the four that you've got can quickly become two or less. So I would buy one personally, and I think it would make a big difference to Liverpool. And also, the other thing is, Matip frees up a space in the squad as well. You can take him out of the Europa League squad and the Premier League squad now without it being, you know, an absolute affront to him. You know, he's not going to be available for the rest of the season, so you've got the space there to do it if you have the opportunity. And I think I would be doing everything I could, but I say that every January, and you know,
I'm just me. No, I agree with you for what it's worth. Yeah, I'm in the same boat, to be honest. And the Canate stuff especially sort of raises that for my liking, because it looks like Liverpool are managing his minutes now more than ever, to be honest, like we had to do with Matip previously.
yeah, we'll certainly keep an eye on it. This Palhinha stuff's been up and down, hasn't it? We'll see where it goes. Neil seems to think not. Hopefully, well, hopefully he's wrong. Liverpool could do with another player, but yeah, anyway, we'll cross the January transfer bridge when we get to it. Right then, let's move ahead to the last clip I want to bring you. That is from today's opposition preview, Liverpool v Man United this weekend. I was delighted to be joined by Beth from the United stands to have a look ahead to the game. So yeah, check out what Beth had to say about the Manx.
Right then, Beth, let's look ahead then to the weekend, Liverpool versus Manchester United at Anfield. We all know what happened last time. It hasn't been pretty for Man United at Old Trafford, obviously the sevens, but there's been other games like Jesse Lingard is the last Man United player to score at Anfield, and that was 5 years ago. It has not been a happy hunting ground for United, and compared to eras of past, even when United were on top, it was never easy, but United would still pick up results at Anfield. Your Juan Matas and your Wayne Rooney's and your John O'Shea's, it's been a long time since you guys have had any of that. So looking forward to Sunday, have you got any hope of one of those type of performances, or are you more worried about that, the fact that there's been a couple of hidings really, and that could be on the cards again?
Yeah, I'm worried. I think anybody would be silly not to be worried. I'm really, really worried, especially after last year. I mean, if I've said this, and it's so unfortunate I'm saying this as a Man United fan, but I think if it's over three, it's just complete embarrassment. Again, like, we can't go over three. Anfield is a really tough place to go for any team. Like, you've not lost a game at Anfield all season, and our away record against the top six is terrible. So, and we've not even drawn a game this season yet. So when you look at it, you think that it does not look like a good outcome for Man United. The only shred of positivity I have is that I feel like last season we went into Anfield away, we were actually in quite a good position in the league. And I think Man United fans were probably overly confident, and Man United themselves were probably overly confident. And we went there and I don't think we were as cautious as we should have been. I don't think we give Liverpool enough respect as what we should have, and we got a hide in, let's be honest. Like, 7-0 is ridiculous. I feel like this year we're going in with such low expectations, and I think the team will be put out there, if Erik ten Hag isn't silly, will put out there to try and concede as little as possible, and if you can nick a goal, you can nick a goal. That'll be the way that we set up. So that gives me a little bit more hope that we're going to go into it with obviously a lot of respect for Liverpool, and we're going to go into it with less expectation. So maybe we could get something from that. But I'm going to be honest, I just don't see anything but a Liverpool win. I've already predicted a 3-1 Liverpool win. Maybe we can nick a goal. But another slight thing is that even though you guys are top of the league and you've had some great results, I still think you're not at the prime Liverpool that you can be. Like, you have been lucky in certain circumstances. You make your own luck, but you've had some good comebacks. I mean, the Crystal Palace game, are you getting sent off? Was it a big help for you guys? Like, you have had them sort of, I think, like, you've not exactly gone out and battered teams this season. We will probably be the first one. So I do think you will beat us, but they're the only kind of shreds of positivity I'm holding on to right now.
We're recording this for clarity, by the way. Erik ten Hag hasn't had his press conference ahead of the game yet, but we saw the other day Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire both went off injured. You've also, Lindelof is touch and go, Varane's been touch and go as well. There's other injuries we mentioned before. Mount, I think Rashford, who knows, been ill.
Bruno suspended.
We'll touch upon that in a moment. Casemiro, what type of Man United team are we going to get? Because if you were trying to predict Ten Hag's 11, now let's presume Shaw and Maguire out. If you ran through it, how would you see him lining his team up?
I'm scared to death of this lineup, honestly. So I think in goal it will be Onana, which again, the crowd are going to be on him because he's been poor, let's be honest. Right back, I think he'll have to go Wan-Bissaka. Centre backs,
Evans and Varane.
It'll be Evans and Varane. Left back, now this is the one where we're going to get ripped. Reguilon against Salah. No, I can't deal with it. Reguilon is so poor defensively. I can't even tell you. Like, he's decent going forward, but defensively he's so lightweight. Salah will literally have him on toast. Like, I hope I'm wrong, but from what I've seen, he will. So maybe be tempted to play Dalot at left back. I probably would go Dalot left back over Reguilon, but even Dalot will probably get turned at a ton and a new one as well. He's weird with Dalot. He either has a top game or he's really poor. So it just depends what you're going to get. Midfield three, I think it'll be Amrabat, Kobbie Mainoo and Scott McTominay. Kobbie Mainoo's been bright, but to chuck him in for Anfield away is a tough ask. Amrabat, he needs all the help he can get in there. I think he's actually a decent player. He's had a poor start. He's quite a basic player, but again, he's been left alone in so many circumstances. It's made him look worse than what he is. And then McTominay, okay, yeah, he can score a goal, but on the break, he's not creative at all. He can't find a through ball. He's not great at passing. But he's got experience and he's physical. So you need to play him, really. I'm just hoping maybe on the break, Kobbie Mainoo can find them passes if we get any opportunity. Then the front three, I reckon it'll be Antony on the right, which isn't much threat for you guys. Højlund up front, and it'll be probably Garnacho on the left, but I wouldn't be surprised if he brings Rashford back in because of, obviously, you know, that Rashford and Trent kind of matchup that we've seen. But Garnacho, I think, could be a threat. I think the only thing that you have to worry about Trent is you want to keep him pinned back because of how good he is going forward. Obviously, defensively, we know he has his frailties, but going forward, he's so good that you need a winger that's going to try and keep him on his toes a little bit. So Garnacho or Rashford, a toss-up, but I'd go with Garnacho, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ten Hag threw Rashford back in there.
You touched upon it earlier about missing Bruno Fernandes, now the captain, of course. I'm not a Man United fan, so I'm going to ask you this question, but if my captain got himself booked on 4 yellow cards for dissent in a game, you're going to beat 3-0. With our biggest rivals away from home, the next game, I personally would have been like absolutely fuming. There's a lot of Liverpool fans on here, Beth, just think he's jibbed it off, like he just didn't fancy it, and he's got himself a yellow card. But what's been the Man United reaction to that? Listen, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's not the biggest problem in the world Man United have got, but he's the captain, and now he's got himself suspended for the Anfield game. Has the reaction been quite critical of him? Because from my point of view, it probably needs to be.
I think a lot of people are frustrated with it, yeah. And do you know what it is? I was watching the game in Old Trafford, the Bournemouth game, and it was weird because the first goal that Bournemouth scored came from Bruno Fernandes ducking out of a tackle because he knew he was on a yellow. Like, he purposely pulled out of it. So from the start of the game, I could see him. Bruno Fernandes is always into everything. Like, he is. He is that sort of player. But he was ducking out of challenges because he was scared of getting a yellow card. You could see it. So then, what was weird to me is you get booked for dissent when you know you're going to get booked for dissent. Like, that is a thing now. He's been booked for dissent numerous times before. He knows it's going to happen. That is his personality. What I think happened is I honestly don't think he was purposely trying to miss the Liverpool game. I just don't think that's his character. What I do think is he lost his head. And that's it. He lost his head. He was losing 3-0 to Bournemouth and he lost his head. That is a Man United captain. Can't happen, especially when you've got Liverpool away. So he needs to be criticised for that. But myself was looking at it because it got to, like, I don't know, the 75th, 80th minute, and we were losing 3-0. And you know the game's gone. We didn't like scoring a goal, and we definitely weren't going to score 2 or 3. So even 4, if we want, we would have needed to win the game, but we weren't even going to draw it. You could tell. And I'm saying, I can see Bruno's getting hotter and hotter and hotter because this is his personality. And United fans, you've got to deal with it. This is just the way he is. And you could see it. And I was saying in the crowd, I was saying, Ten Hag, take him off. Take him off. We've got Anfield away. Take him off. He makes 3 subs. He brings Donny van der Beek in, which shows he knows the game's gone himself. He makes 3 subs. He doesn't bring Bruno off. And I'm like, he's on a yellow. If he gets a yellow, he's suspended at Anfield. I'm saying it. Loads of people in the crowd say, bring him off. He doesn't do it. We can all see it's going to happen. He gets booked. Sometimes I feel like the manager needs to step in, see the player is losing his head and make that decision for him. And the fact that I didn't do that, that really made me question him, because I'm like, have you just not seen that? Or what is the reasoning behind that? So that annoyed me with Ten Hag. It annoyed me with Bruno as well, because you know Anfield away is coming up and you need to keep yourself together. But he did just fly off the handle. I don't think he purposely did it, but it is frustrating because he is our only creative outlet. No matter what you think of Bruno, he can have some poor games. People say he doesn't turn up against the big teams, but he's our best creative outlet. And I think on his day, our best player. So to miss him, I look at that team, I think there's no creativity in it at all, even if we do get a chance, really. But maybe the only thing I can think is we are going there to try and defend. And Bruno does give the ball away quite often, trying things. So maybe it'll help us keep the ball when we do have it. But I'd rather have Bruno any day than not have him. So it's frustrating.
Well, I usually end by asking for predictions, but you kind of dropped it in before. You said 3-1, which is, you know, optimistic considering you don't score at Anfield. So there might be something in that one for you. But really, thank you so much for jumping on to join us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Thanks to Beth, thanks to everybody who appeared on the show, and thanks to you guys for listening to it. Like I say, redmenplus.com is the place to go if you want those shows in full, either in video and podcast forms each and every week. One quick message again before we head off. Just want to let you guys know, you've already probably seen that our tickets for our Ireland tour is on sale now. Go to ticketmaster.ie. Search Redmen TV if you want tickets to come and see us in either Dublin or over in Belfast, Northern Ireland. However, we've also added the third day to a show. This time it is in London. Yes, we are playing the Indigo at the O2 on April 24th next year. Those tickets are available right now. If you go to our social accounts, you can find us on Twitter, you can find us on Facebook, you can find us on Instagram. Just search for the Redmen TV. You'll find the links for the tickets there as well. So yeah, Redmen live in London, Indigo at the O2, which is actually, I think it's the biggest venue we'll have ever done a live show, so it's pretty daunting, but we hope you can see you there as well. Elsewhere, if you want to just search for the tickets yourselves, if you just go to aegpresents.co.uk, that's aegpresents.co.uk, you'll find us there for searching on us. But yeah, Redmen Live, it'll be me, Paul, Chris, the entire team, plus a very special musician who we'll announce shortly. Tickets are on sale now. Come and see us live in London. We'll have an absolute belter time. By the time April comes around, Liverpool have hopefully have already won the League Cup. We'll be on their way to winning the FA Cup and the Europa League and the Premier League as well. So come and join us for what is going to be hopefully a huge, huge celebration. Loads of Redmen, well, nonsense and shenanigans really. Some music from a very special guest. So yeah, tickets are available now for that one and the Ireland shows as well. We can't wait to meet as many of you guys as possible. Since the pandemic, we haven't been able to get out and about too much. This is the first time we've properly been able to do it without any fears, touch wood, of anything going wrong. So do go and get your tickets for that one. And make sure you carry on tuning into everything Redmen. We've got you covered ahead of the Man United game. We've got loads of content pre-game, post-game, and everything in between the game itself on the watch along on YouTube and everything else you love about Liverpool Football Club and the Redmen TV combined this weekend. So yeah, thanks for listening. Go and check out all the amazing content, and we'll be back with another weekly next week. See you all soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.